welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diaz, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Welcome to Write Through the Roof. Today I'm speaking with Caroline Mitchell. How are you going, Caroline?
Hello. I'm great, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. A little background about Caroline. So Caroline is a best-selling thriller author, having sold over 500,000 books. She's originally from Ireland, which you can probably hear, but she's now living in Essex. And Caroline is a former police detective working in CID, but now a full-time writer. Her latest novel, Silent Victim, is currently the number one best-selling crime, mystery and suspense novel on Amazon and number two overall. So thank you so much for sparing the time to speak with me.
Oh, no, it's lovely. It's always nice to take a little break out from writing and have a chat.
Excellent. Okay, so how I like to start off is I like to think of this as some kind of calisthenics, you know, a bit of stretching, a bit of jogging on the spot before we get into the juicy questions. So, are you a plotter or a pantser?
Yes, I'm definitely a plotter, I have to say. I've written 10 books now and I've learned along the way to plot things because I got fed up of painting myself into corners and having to get rid of lots of words. So I do plot. I tend to use a spreadsheet and I plot my chapters on Scrivener. But things, you know, it's nothing set in stone. So it does change along the way and the characters dictate their paths. But I do start off with a good idea of where I'm going.
Mm. So how detailed is your spreadsheet?
Yeah, no, it's only, I might start out with writing like 70 chapters, little boxes, one for each chapter, and literally just a couple of lines within each box. So it's not hugely detailed. And I always write the synopsis before I write the book. And it always has to have a really strong hook. It has to be something I would be happy to look at and want to pick up and read. Because I always think, well, if I can't make the synopsis sound really good, then I need to change the story that I'm going to write, because that's the most important. I always try and write really commercial books and something with a strong hook. And if it's not working out, then I need to change the story. So that's actually the first thing I do. I know a lot of writers dread writing the synopsis. It's actually my favourite part of the process. So that's the first thing I do. And then I do my little plotting for each chapter after that.
Interesting. That sounds like a really, having written myself into the corner of trying to pull out my own synopsis, that sounds like a really good way of doing it.
Yeah, it works for me.
Yeah, well, obviously. So do you have any writing rituals?
Yes, I mean, I've got kids, so obviously I have to start my morning getting them out to school first, but then the house is always lovely and quiet after that. So I'll sit down with my laptop, have about 3 coffees really to get myself underway, and then have a bit of peace and quiet with just headphones on, and I listen to Spotify, I listen to these soundtracks, and just check up on my social media before getting into writing. So it's pretty much the same thing every day, except for things like launch days. And then I always get a nice bottle of something fizzy and celebrate and do a bit of work in the evening. But yeah, that's kind of a bit boring, really. But I write as much as I can before the kids come home from school. And then in the evening, when everyone's settled, I start again and more coffee and keep going and until I can really, you know, stay awake.
So I wasn't going to ask you what your writing fuel of choice is, but it sounds like it's coffee.
Yes. And maybe a little bit of alcohol at weekends, depending on how hard it's going. So if the gin comes out, I'm not having a good day. So
fueled by gin. That sounds like it goes along with the mystery detective genre, really, a bit of booze at the end of the day.
Yes, definitely. It's all for research, you know, solely. I just force myself to try it every now and again.
Of course. You're dedicated to your craft.
Yes.
Okay, good. Sounds like we've got to know you a little bit better. So let's get into some more in-depth questions. So how do you describe your writing and are there themes that you like to explore?
Yes, I mean, I haven't worked in the police for 9 years and and dealing with vulnerable victims, victim of high-risk domestic abuse, some lot of tough cases I dealt with over the years. I feel that that kind of does come out in my writing to a certain extent. So I do write quite dark. I'm not overly violent. There's no gore as such, but there's still quite dark themes. And it's really exploring the darker side of human nature. I write a lot from both the protagonist and the antagonist point of view to make them a really rounded person, you know, to show the reasons behind the way they act, why they do. They're not this mustache twiddling bad guy in the corner, you know, because people from all walks of life. And one thing I learned in the police, you know, is that nothing is black and white in the police. So as well as portraying the antagonist, the protagonist, obviously I portray the groups of people in the police that deal with crime and how they cope with that, and the knock-on effect to the victims and their families, and just everything has this huge ripple effect. And it was something I was keen to portray. I mean, I'm quite fortunate that I write both crime, but I write psychological thrillers as well. So I love delving deep into the human psyche, and it's something I've enjoyed in my career that really helps me now with my writing.
So how do you distinguish between psychological thriller and crime?
Yeah, to be honest, there's not a lot of difference between my psych thriller novels and my crime novels, other than there's a little bit more police procedure in the crime novels. I just call myself a thriller author because they're all thrillers as such. I try to make them page turners with lots of twists and turns. It's just that in the crime novels, they're from the perspective of the police officer and usually the perspective of the person that she's chasing, either it be a serial killer or a kidnapper. And in the psychological thrillers, it's more of a domestic setting, so husband and wife, and that's where Silent Victim comes from. It's actually a grooming storyline of this woman who was groomed as a youngster, and she has a body buried in the back of her garden. Her husband wants to sell the house, but when she goes to, it's gone. And that, you know, explores all these topics of how she was a victim, how she came to kill this person who's in the garden. Was she pushed or did she instigate this? So, yeah, I love the psych thrillers for that. But like I say, there's not a huge variation. Most of my fans read both the psych thrillers and the crime novels, which is brilliant for me because I get to enjoy writing both.
Sounds like a fascinating hook. No wonder you wanted to write that. My brain's going all over the place. I'll have to get a copy.
I'll spend it on my head.
Excellent. So in your writing journey, so you're now up to about your 10th novel, maybe more. What number are you up to now in terms of your novels?
I'm trying to keep track of it myself. I've just written my 10th, which is just undergone the editing process. That's Truth and Lies, which is the first in my Amy Winter series. So I'm working on my 11th now.
Okay.
So yeah.
So with your 11 novels, what do you think is the one thing that's helped improve your writing?
I think definitely you've got to keep learning as an author, and people do message me for tips and things, and I always say to them, just keep learning all the time. Don't ever let it get to a point where your writing becomes stagnant, and always push yourself and learn something more and just keep working on it. And you know, have your mentors who inspire you, people like Stephen King. I always write better when I'm listening to a Stephen King novel, purely because his characterization is, I'm just in total awe of his writing, and his characters are amazing. But then I listen to podcasts, you know, which is really helpful. I read lots of books. I study a lot on screenwriting, things like that. So always keep learning. That's my big piece of advice when it comes to writing.
So are you trying anything new at the moment?
Well, I suppose you could say new, but it's probably a couple of books ago, I started doing dragon dictating. So I was basically dictating my first draft of my book. So it is just talking into a microphone and getting that first draft down without having to touch the keyboard. So I came across that when I suffered from a bit of RSI, as you can imagine, writing that many novels in just the space of a couple of years. My wrists were really hurting, and I was looking for something different to try, and it worked really well. I mean, it has its problems with my accent. Sometimes there's a fair bit of editing that I have to go back and do, but the dialogue is a lot more natural when I dictate. So I'm quite pleased with that. So that's worth a shot. It doesn't work for everyone, but it worked for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine that the dialogue, especially when I tried it, I found that it was difficult for me. I had to basically learn how to, and I'm stumbling over my words even now, think while talking, which is not my natural thing. Are you more of an oral storyteller?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a mind shift. It did take me time, but I was just so determined because I heard all these great things about people getting out a lot of words quite quickly.
Yeah.
And just thought, I'm going to keep doing this until I get my head around it. And now there's absolutely no problem. My kids are used to hearing me mumbling away, talking to myself when I'm dictating. Or sometimes when I walk the dogs and I have a plot hole or something, I'll start thinking about what needs to be fixed. And I find someone catching me talk to myself when I'm walking down the path and, you know, give me a wide berth. So, yeah, I suppose I do like to talk things out as such. And it did come quite naturally to me, but it is worth persevering with, definitely. Mm. I highly recommend it.
It's probably these days with the headphones in, people just presume you're on a phone call rather than before. Yes. You just look like some nutter just muttering to yourself. Like,
when you're talking about murdering someone, then they kind of get into it. Hopefully they've come to know me now, just the crazy lady with the dog. She's okay.
Oh, well, that must sound also strange to your children. But they'd be used to it by now, too, I imagine.
If I talk about something rude, like there's any bedroom scenes or something, it goes all quiet and I type that little bit in.
Okay, so you were talking about Stephen King. So who else inspires you?
Oh, I you know, I think I grew up on Stephen King. It's so hard to read anyone else's work because in my eyes, he's just such a genius. But I love Dean Koontz as well, which is very similar. And of course, I have now in the present day, I love everything by Mel Sherratt. She's always been a hero of mine. And I was thrilled when we became friends. And we always meet up now at author events. And her crime is so gritty and true to life, but she's brilliant. And of course, Angela Marsden's as well. Lovely lady and brilliant author. They're all so inspiring. And you definitely need it when you're starting off. You definitely need to have inspiring people around you. I always say, just keep away from the people that try and suck the joy out of your day and look towards the others who have, you know, done it and done such a great job on it. So yeah, all of those, you can't go wrong with them, really.
Excellent. So you started to tell us a little more about Silent Victim. So what inspired that?
Oh, I have so many ideas floating around in my head, and my husband and I were talking about selling our house one day, and I thought, well, what would it be like if you had a body buried in the back of your house? And what would you do then? That'd be really difficult. But then what if you went and found, you know, the body was gone? Then what would you do? And of course, my husband's so used to it now, he just passed on the remarks. He says, oh, maybe you should write that down. That sounds like a good idea. Yeah. But there's all my books. When I was writing it, then the whole grooming thing came in of this Emma and her teacher. And I started researching and I just became so fascinated with it. And I found a lot of true life cases I was studying and I just couldn't believe that sort of thing went on. But then I remembered in my police how vulnerable victims were groomed and manipulated. And it kind of all came together in the story, which is really interesting. With Witness, which is also a previous book of mine, there wasn't meant to be any domestic abuse in that book. It was a completely different storyline. But as I was writing it then, that whole theme came in quite strongly. So I think it is a mixture of my past experiences and these fresh ideas that come in and mingle with it. So, yeah, it's always very exciting when something works out like that. But I do like to have a theme-inspired book, and I'm just really pleased that this whole theme has worked out quite well.
So you do, apart from calling on your own experience, you do research other crimes?
I do, and I love really interesting stories. There's a few I've seen that I've written down and thought, oh my gosh, I'd love to write a book like that, but I'm not going to tell anyone what it is yet. I just like to have a few ideas up my sleeve, but oh gosh, yeah, you know, there's nothing more fascinating than real life. And that was the one that was on Netflix, is it Mindhunter? Oh, it's a brilliant series on Netflix. Anything like that, anything to do with psychopaths, sociopaths, all these personality disorders, or people who have just been ordinary people just pushed in life and gone down the wrong path. Fascinating, really, to find out how people tick. And, of course, like I said, the ripple effect it has on everyone else. But there's no shortage. There's no excuse, really. People say, where do you get your ideas? And I say, well, how can you not get ideas? Look around you. You know, there's so many out there. So it works for me.
Now you have in your back catalogue, so you have a number of different series with different female protagonists. Why were they separate? Why did you separate them out into different stories for different protagonists?
Yeah. it was more to do with my career than anything else. I signed with Bookature to start off with, which are a brilliant digital publisher. And I wrote this whole supernatural crime thriller series because, of course, Stephen King often writes kind of supernatural stuff. And I really enjoyed it. I wrote three books in that series, and it was great fun. It was a police detective, but also had a little supernatural edge to it. And after I wrote three, I thought, you know, I really would like to reach more readers because not everyone likes supernatural, and some people vividly hate it as they do, quite, you know, in the reviews. I mean, thankfully, overall, it's been good reviews, but occasionally you'll get this one and think, oh my God, I didn't realize this had supernatural and I absolutely hated it. And I thought, well, I'd like to reach more readers and maybe I'll just do a straight crime book. Mm-hmm. So then I wrote the Ruby Preston series, but even then these little themes came in that she was dating this gangster and she was a police. And she had all this going on in the background while she's trying to solve crime. And that was really good. That was a three book series and I enjoyed that. But then I changed publishers. So obviously I couldn't continue in either of those series. Thomas and Mercer now, who are just brilliant publisher. So I had to start a new series if I wanted to write crime thrillers. And it was great because I love writing new characters and starting something fresh. And Amy Winter has such an amazing backstory. I cannot wait to share what's going on with her. And again, it's something that little bit different. It's based in Notting Hill in London as well, which is a beautiful part of London. So different than the usual crime, gritty crime scenes. But she has an amazing dark backstory that I'm very excited to share. So that'll be out later in the year.
Fantastic. So it sounds like you're a very busy woman, so I might start to wrap up now, so let you get back to writing the next fantastic thriller. So what are you working on right now?
Yes, I'm working on book two in the Amy Winter crime thriller series, but already I have an idea for another psychological thriller bouncing around in my head, but it's going to have to wait until I get book two wrapped up. So that's due at the end of April. So yeah, I am a bit against it for time because obviously I've had the launch of Silent Victim, and then I've got the next book one in the Amy Winter series coming out soon, and I've got to finish this other one. So it really is a juggling act, and it is, you know, you do have to put in a lot of work when you write for a digital publisher because the books come out so quickly, but it's great fun. I love it. I'm very fortunate. But yeah, it's Amy Winter book two, and I'm very pleased with it. So I hope my readers will take to her and she'll do quite well when she gets out there.
Oh, fantastic. So any advice for that time management for any other writers out there, how to juggle all those different projects?
Yes, you don't have any personal life at all, just work. I'm joking. I do go out occasionally. But basically, yeah, you know, to get books out at that speed that I've done, it has been a couple of years. I wanted to get a back catalogue out there, so I have worked really long hours and I work really hard. But yeah, you do have to make a lot of sacrifices, but it is worth it in the end. When you get to the stage where you're writing for a living, it really is the best job in the world, and it's worth everything you had to do to get there.
Ah, fantastic. All right, well, it sounds like, as you said, you're up against it for a deadline, so I'll let you get back to it and perhaps a bit of gin. Oh, no, what? It's nighttime at you where you are. I forgot. It's morning here. So if
people have really enjoyed our chat.
So if people want to, thank you. So if people want to find out more about you and your work, where's the best place to find you online?
Well, I've got a website, which probably is the best place to start because I've got all my books in order there so they can see which book belongs where and what series it comes with. So that's www.caroline-writes.com, or to be honest, if they just search Caroline Mitchell author on Google, I've got loads of things out there. They'll find me easily enough, and I'm on Amazon as well.
And killing it on Amazon.
Very happy. You too at the moment.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Caroline.
Thank you. Have a great day. Enjoy the sun while we're being snowed on over here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, so the last couple of episodes, my guests have talked about their love for dictation and how they can whack out a first draft incredibly fast. So I thought I'd talk a little bit more about my experiences with dictation. Now, I've tried it before, and it has good and bad points. But one caveat before I continue, I am a bit of a cheapskate, so I've only ever used free versions of the dictation applications. The experience might be different if I actually forked out the $200+ for the most recommended application by others, Dragon Naturally Speaking. So when I've tried dictation, I found it was a complete mindset change. I think through typing. I don't necessarily know what the next sentence is going to be until my fingers start moving. Whereas this really doesn't work with dictation. I've had to learn to think before I speak, which means long gaps between sentences. I had to turn myself into an oral storyteller, which is not natural for me at all. And once I trained myself to do this a little bit, I actually found that my voice and my writing was quite different and really formal. And I really don't have an explanation for that. As Caroline mentioned, also that application has trouble with accents, but I understand that some will learn your accent in a process known as How to Train Your Dragon. And as Karen mentioned last week, while you can get 10,000 words down a day, there's a lot of editing due to misinterpretations. But what I did find helpful and efficient, and something that I'd actually forgotten about, is editing using dictation. When I edit on hard copy, using dictation, it's really easy to select a word or phrase and replace. I'll have to remember that next time I'm editing. And I've also been inspired by Caroline's comments earlier about how much more natural dialogue is with dictation. So next time I'm writing a talking scene, I'll have to think about giving dictation another go. And there are obviously the health benefits, because I know after a 4,000-word writing day and my wrists are feeling a little bit tender, that I probably should give dictation another go and give them a rest. Like any new skill, learning dictation takes a bit of time, but it's always good to have other options to get our words down. Thanks for listening to Write Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Write Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?